Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Elodie Suderstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, August 4th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Hey, happy Monday to you, too. And as usual, gold is down this Monday. Seems like I can't remember one Monday where it's actually been up. But
rainy days and Mondays always get gold down.
Yep, certainly does. Gold is down 580 on the New York spot at 1289. Silver's down 13 at 20.28. Platinum looks unchanged at 1468. And palladium down 8 at $860. You have the USDX today trading, really not doing much today, 0.01. at 81.32. Crude oil is up 59 cents at 98.47. And something gave the Dow a boost here in this, about this last hour or so of trading. It managed to be up 75 points at 16,569. You have the NASDAQ up 31 at 43.83 and the S&P up 13 at 19.39. And the 10-year yield is 0.01 to the downside at 2.49%. So, you know, I've been reading where there's a lot of the COMEX longs are getting out of their long positions, and but I'll tell you, week it certainly was a weak July for the purchases of gold and silver. The U.S. Mint, their log for Silver Eagles and Gold Eagles, particularly their Silver Eagles, they didn't even get over 2 million as of today. So,
and they were running it now. What was their maximum back a couple of months ago?
March, there was, I believe it was March, was 5 million.
Yeah,
and last month was the month before was 2.6, and every other one, of course, was over 3. So, I believe, if I recall correctly, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but again, it goes to show you what the summer can do to precious metals. So, yes, we all talk about manipulation, and certainly the prices for gold and silver are lower. They're certainly holding this level due to manipulation. But if you don't have buyers, even the physical market can't hold off their manipulation. So I think summer doldrums certainly did set in for the month of July. And I certainly believe August can be a totally different month, although you have most of Europe is off. They basically shut down for August. And so we could have another trading schedule for gold and silver, as we have seen for July. And these really aren't bad prices for either gold or silver. They're still great opportunities to pick up or add to your portfolios.
You know, I have an article that was from an outfit called SRS Rockuk Report. I don't know what the name means, but they are. The title of the article is Chinese Silver Inventory is Nearly 90% Depleted at Shanghai Futures Exchange. Now, most of you have heard about the Shanghai Gold Exchange. That's what we're talking about. They sell gold and silver and other products, and they focus on taking physical delivery of the product. This is not a place where you're speculating in paper gold or paper silver, as you do on the COMEX markets and whatever commodities markets and future markets you're dealing with here in the United States. That's all about paper, all right? You can get physical gold, but mostly it's paper, and that's what's really being bid on, and the price of paper silver is whatever it is today, and the price of paper gold, that's what we see and we report. The Shanghai Gold Exchange is intended to sell gold and silver and other commodities, and you take delivery. Take delivery. If you're coming in to sell, you got to have real gold and silver to sell. Now, this idea was celebrated a few months ago, at least by people like myself, because it was assumed, I assumed, that this would establish a price for physical gold and physical silver. And that price would be much different from the price of paper gold and paper silver that we see on the markets here in the United States. But here, this report raises a different possibility. It says Chinese silver inventories are nearly 90% depleted at Shanghai Futures Exchange. In a nutshell, silver inventories declined nearly 90% from their record peak set in March of 2013. Shanghai Futures Exchange experienced a net decline of 995 million tons from March of 2013 to the end of July of this year. Now, that's over a year. That's something in the neighborhood of 15, 16 months, I don't know. But still, 995 million tons of silver were depleted out of their inventory. Now, this is interesting. I mean, this is interesting. This is, to me, this is an important insight. Chinese silver inventories grow increasingly tight as stocks at Shanghai Futures Exchange continue to fall to record lows. It is truly amazing to watch how much silver inventories declined at the Shanghai Futures Exchange since March of 2013. It's important to understand that the Shanghai Futures Exchange, as well as the Shanghai Gold Exchange, behave more as physical delivery markets than the COMEX. Now, a guy by the name of Chris Marchese, analyst at silverinvestor.com, said the most of the silver and gold contracts at COMEX were settled in cash, whereas the vast majority of contracts at the Shanghai exchanges are settled in physical metal, which is probably the reason we're seeing a huge drawdown of silver stocks at the Shanghai Futures Exchange. Well, that may be probably why it's happening, but it's not necessarily why it's happening. If the Shanghai Gold Exchange and the Shanghai Future Exchange are selling gold and silver at the prices set on COMEX, they are stupid. If they're selling physical gold and they're selling physical silver on those markets at the paper and gold, the paper gold and paper silver prices established in the United States, they're giving their gold and silver away. The only way that the Shanghai Gold Exchange and the Shanghai Future Exchange can prosper or even survive, in my opinion at least, is to let the demand for physical gold and physical silver increase the prices for those precious metals above the paper prices set by COMEX here in the United States. If the prices for physical precious metals rise in Shanghai, that price will attract whatever physical gold and silver are being sold in the world. If you're going to sell your gold, most people would rather sell it for $200 over spot than spot. And if they were paying $200 more for physical gold in Shanghai, one way or another, the gold would move in that direction. Physical gold would move in that direction. As a result, their gold and silver inventory should increase. But they're saying, no, the silver inventory has fallen by 90%. So long as the Shanghai Gold Exchange is selling physical gold and silver at COMEX prices for paper gold and paper silver, their inventories will continue to decline, perhaps until they're out of business. It's conceivable. I won't say it's true, but it's conceivable that the U.S. government, if it's already sold off all its gold out of the United States Treasury, the United States government might be secretly buying gold or silver on the Shanghai exchanges. I'm not saying that's true. That's a far-out speculation. But it's not impossible if they're selling the gold at paper gold prices. Shanghai Gold Exchange can't survive. Shanghai Futures Exchange can't survive if they continue to sell physical gold and physical silver at paper gold and paper silver prices. If they don't pay a significant premium for physical metals, the Wily Orientals are stupid, and they're going to go broke. And the reason I bring this up is because Melody's talking about how the purchase of silver eagles has fallen significantly from the U.S. Mint. Well, maybe people are going over and buying silver at the Shanghai Exchange rather than the U.S. Mint. A lot of physical silver is being purchased and taken out of the market over in Shanghai. Now, whether or not that equates, that has anything to do with the decline in sales of silver eagles at the U.S. Mint, I don't know, but it's at least an interesting coincidence, if you catch my drift.
It is a coincidence. Well, I'm not quite sure. You know, I think there's a reason why people buy silver eagles. I think when you're dealing with those, you're only dealing, you know, with bars, and those type of buyers aren't going to be the same buyers that buy silver eagles. But you don't know. But there was 1.975 million silver eagles that were sold for July.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of strange things going on, and it, along with the silver fix that's going to be changed here, we'll know in 2 weeks.
Silver
week
fix dies on August 14th.
Yes. So
10 days from now.
You know, personally, I think that has. Personally, I think that has something to do. It's just something that's, you know, I think people are just being a little cautious. They don't know what's going to happen. And personally, I believe it's going to change over without a bat of an eye. I think it's just going to move from one exchange to the other. I don't think it's going to make any big difference whatsoever. But, you know, I think people, when there's something changing over 100 years.
Yeah, the silver fix, the London silver fix, is an institution that's been in place for over a century. And people just presume, we have presumed it was there for the last 100 years. People presumed it would be there for the next 100 years. And they set the price of silver for delivery in London on a daily basis, maybe twice a day, I don't know, but at least daily. And they are going to fold up their tent on August 14th. That's the last day they'll be in business. Now, it may be that the loss of the London silver fix, it's supposed to be replaced by a new entity called the London Silver Price. London Silver Fix being replaced by London Silver Price. All right? You would think, because the names are about the same, there's not going to be much difference. But I think there will be a difference, because there has to be some ulterior motive for the London Silver Fix closing its doors. They have exerted an enormous amount of power. They've had opportunity to make enormous profits running the London Silver Fix for the past 100 years. You don't close an institution like that just because somebody says, I think I want to take a vacation. They had to have a serious reason. I think the serious reason is increasing regulation, civil liability, and perhaps even criminal liability. That's my opinion. Something moved them to shut the doors. Whatever it was will still be in effect when the new London Silver Price starts up, if it starts up. And that's not even a done deal yet, and we're only 10 days away from the one closing. And we're not absolutely sure that the other one's going to go in. It might and it might not. We don't know yet. It's evidence of instability. Here's the problem. There have been some number of silver derivatives that are unknown to me. I don't know what the number is. But the derivatives have been, the derivatives are an insurance policy of sorts where, depending on how you're investing in silver, for example, you might take out a derivative where if the price of silver goes over $25, I'm going to lose on my investment. So I take out a derivative that guarantees to pay me if the price of silver goes over $25 an ounce on a certain date. All right? Likewise, I might be investing in silver in a way where if the price falls under, say, $18 an ounce, I'm going to lose money. So I get a derivative, and the derivative triggers if the price falls below $18 an ounce, I am guaranteed to get X number of dollars from the issuer, the derivative. The problem is that no one anticipated, certainly not publicly, that the London Silver Fix was going to go out of business on August 14th. The earliest we saw any reports, I saw reports on it, was June of this year. I doubt if anybody knew about it before May. I assume that there are derivatives out there that were entered into contractually before anyone knew that the London Silver Fix was going to disappear on August 14th. Now, this is critical because they signed these contracts, and the contract specified that if the price of silver goes above $25 on, let's say, September 15th, then the issuer of the derivative has to pay me X number of dollars. All right? But who says what the price is on September 15th? There are scores of markets around the world and institutions that have opinions on what the price of silver should be. So what they did in the contracts is they have, for years, they have assigned the price determination would be done by the London Silver Fix for silver derivatives. Been there 100 years, everybody figured it'd be there the next 100 years. Well, it's not going to be there the next 100 years. In fact, it's not going to be there 2 weeks from now. What? Once they disappear, who sets the price for these pre-existing derivatives and these derivative contracts? If the price can no longer be set by the London Fix because it's out of business, what is the value of those derivatives? They are no longer legally enforceable. Somebody's got to come up. The two parties to the derivatives could agree that they could set the price at the Shanghai Futures Exchange. They can set it at COMEX. They can set it at a score of different places. But unless they amend their existing contracts, the contracts become essentially voidable if anyone wants to complain because the entity that's specified to set the price no longer exists. And for me, this is the big potential danger on August 14th and thereafter. What's going to happen to those derivatives? We've heard stories for years about the massive derivatives. Some people say there could be $2 quadrillion worth of derivatives in the floating around the globe right now. I have no idea what, you know, small percentage of that is silver, tiny percentage probably are silver derivatives. Still, what if these silver derivatives, current silver derivatives, turn out to be worthless because the London Silver Fix no longer exists? What consequence may that have for the rest of the derivatives market? We're going to watch and see. We don't know the answer. I certainly don't know the answer. But it might be the big question about the loss of the London Silver Fix. We're going to take a break now for some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Today, Obama came out and he said, it was actually an interview with The Economist last week. Obama says that the fancy homes and corporate jets of the rich don't bother him. Well, no, that's because he hobnobs with them. What's he going to do? Say, yeah, that really bothers the heck out of me. He said when he brings up income inequality, he's not trying to stir class resentment like his political opponents say. Yeah. He says, feel free to keep your house in the Hamptons and your corporate jets. He says, I'm not concerned about how you're living. But he says he obsesses with the fact that under his watch, those at the top are getting a larger and larger share of the economy, whereas middle class and working class families are stuck. Their wages and incomes are stagnant. They have been stagnant for almost two decades now. I mean, there is a way to address the problems, but he says, then he talks about how well they did. Of course, this is a political deal for the election year. He says, our policies have produced a record stock market, record corporate profits. So now he just said that he's not going to create any type of class warfare, but yet he talks about, you know, the fancy homes and the corporate jets of the rich and famous, which are all corporate owners, and so high stock market prices and high corporate profits benefit all the wealthy, but yet he talks about how great a job he did to the economy by having a record stock market, a record corporate profit. So he's telling you exactly who he is working for. 52 consecutive job growth, 52 months of consecutive job growth, 10 million new jobs. And, of course, we can break that down and say that's really a bunch of lies. An energy sector that's booming, a housing market that has bounced back. No, the housing market has not bounced back. You just got a bunch of hedge funds that are out there buying up all the properties. You have banks that are holding on to their properties. So, really, you don't have a real true view of the housing market. And a lot of those homes that are being built are all rentals, or the building code, or the building numbers are rentals. So, no, it's a far cry from a good economy. And just sort of struck me as, it is a, they do speak from both, they speak with forked tongue, both sides of the mouth, or however.
Out of their nostrils. Yeah, they speak out of their nose, their mouth, their ears, and their whatever. They'll speak any way they can in order to try to get reelected.
And
you know what the fundamental reason is, at least in my opinion? For the income inequality.
Let's hear what your opinion is, then I'll tell you mine.
Political campaign contribution laws.
No.
They allow Congress to take money, and to a significant degree, from any political campaign contributor, and they will, and from lobbyists, supposedly as political campaign contributions, but really as bribes. They are in a position to profit from whatever laws they enact. And if somebody comes up and he has enough money, they will say, okay, we're going to front for, we'll front for this bill.
No.
And if he doesn't have enough money, they won't. And what I'm getting to is the Congress, because of the political, they don't get political campaign contributions from the great unwashed. The middle class doesn't give them any money. The lower class certainly doesn't give them any money. They get the money from the rich, and therefore they pass laws to favor the rich. And the result is a growing income inequality as we pass laws that allow the people who already have more money and they know what to do with to take even more money from the middle class and lower classes.
Well, that's a start. And it certainly, that certainly does have an impact. And, of course, some of those changes in laws, of course, was NAFTA, all the free trade agreements that they passed. They had to get passed somehow. And there was only one person out there that was saying that you would hear this giant sucking sound of jobs leaving this country. And, of course, that was Ross Perot.
Yep.
And he knew exactly what he was talking about, him being the businessman and the successful businessman that he is and was at that point in time. But even he had his short failings because he didn't follow through with what he started to do. And, of course, you know, there's a lot of reasons and pardon?
He wasn't elected.
He
so
quit.
He didn't bother following. Well, whatever.
He quit.
Yeah, I suppose some people say under threats, but
well, you know,
and he wasn't
quit.
Elected. But one of the other points about Ross Perot, he made most of his money off the government.
Yeah,
he was one of the people that profited from government. It's part of the reason he knew what was going on. He understood the racket because he participated in it to some degree. Right? And after it was all over, and people said, "Well, we don't want you, Ross." Ross said, "Fine, I'll go back to just making money off the government."
Mm-hmm. So, absolutely. And so there's lots of reasons, but that certainly is a very important one and probably where it all truly stems from. The other reason I brought that up was the total federal debt to the U.S. government has now increased more than $7 trillion. It's another, you know, during the slightly more than 5.5 years Obama has been president. That is more than the debt increased under all U.S. presidents from Washington through Clinton combined.
And that's based on the official debt of
exactly
$17 trillion, and it's quite possibly much greater than that.
But we're going to use these numbers, and it is more debt than was accumulated in the first 227 years of this nation's existence from 1776 through 2003. The total federal debt first passed the $7 trillion mark in January 2004 after George Bush had been in office almost three years. And everybody knows these numbers. I mean, you've heard multiple people talk about these numbers, but it really doesn't hurt to go back and review these numbers because it tells you all the reasons why you need gold and silver in your portfolios. These numbers are only going to increase.
Yeah.
When he took office in 2009, the total federal debt was about a little over $10.5 trillion. As the close of business on July 30th, 2014, it had risen to $17.6 trillion. I'm not going to go into all the little digits.
Those are just billions. Hundreds of billions.
Hundreds of billions of dollars. $7.6 trillion.
Just leave that as a gratuity for the waiters and waitresses. That's all. That's
and I mean, really, those littler numbers really don't mean anything anymore. It's a $17 trillion. As of June, there were 115 million households in the United States, and that is according to the U.S. Census Bureau. The $17.6 trillion in debt the federal government had accumulated as of the end of July equals $153,671 per household. That's a lot per household. Yes, Al?
How much did you say per household?
$153,671.
Yeah, I think it works out. I think it averages out to about $53,000, $55,000 per person. So it would be about 155, something like that.
This is actually household.
Or household
really
family,
yeah.
Which has an average of 2-3 people in it, so that's probably the explanation.
The median household income in the United States in 2012, the last year that it was estimated, was $51,000. Thus, President Obama has increased the federal debt by more than the typical household's annual income.
Mm-hmm. Who's going to pay this, Melody? Who's going to pay that debt?
Who's going to pay it?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody.
Now they'll stick some of us.
Yes,
well, they get
will.
Started on paying some of it. But the truth is, the majority of that debt will never be paid. And it means the majority of the creditors who've loaned money to the government will never be paid, because they're not going to squeeze all that money out of the American people. You go ahead and look at the average. It works out to something like $55,000, and that's if we use official statistics, which are almost certainly hugely understated. But the average man, my fair share of the existing debt's $55,000. What do you think the chances are that you can squeeze it out of me? Not real good. You understand? And if the debt is actually $90 trillion, which John Williams, he thinks it's about $90 trillion at shadowstats.com, that translates into, I don't remember, I think it's $300,000 per person. And if it's over $200 trillion, which comes from the Congressional Budget Office, including unfunded liabilities, it works out to about $700,000 per person. If you're a family of four, that's $700,000 for the husband, $700,000 for the wife, $700,000 for little Billy and little Joanne. All right? That's $2.8 million for a family of four. Got it? How many families do you know who have it? How many do you know that could repay it? And the answer is very, very few. And even if they could, how many do you think are going to cooperate on coughing up an extra $2.8 million for a family of four to give to Uncle Samuel? And the answer is not very many. And the point to all of this is the debt can't be paid. So it's not going to be paid.
And, you know, the whole reason I wanted to bring these numbers back was they do need to be reviewed. Yes, it's old news. The only new news is higher numbers. That's new news. But it's important because you're going to hear it's an election year. You see all sorts of things that really don't make sense. You know, you see the stock markets hit all these highs. You have the world falling apart, but it doesn't seem to matter. You have politicians coming out telling you how great things are. People are confused. You're like deer in the headlights. You don't know what to do. And so by just reviewing these little numbers is to tell you there isn't anything that can be done. These numbers are real. Everybody agrees to them, and they're numbers that can't be paid. These are numbers that will affect each and every one of you. So unless you do something to protect yourself against these numbers, the day of reckoning is coming to when the bills are going to come due and we won't be able to pay. And yes, everyone who says this is the United States of America, it's not going to happen here. Well, why won't it? Why can't it? And I'm telling you, it will. It will happen. The only thing we haven't been able to determine is when. They have incredible power. They have incredible power. There's agreements worldwide. You scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. There's private meetings and private agreements you know nothing about. And I don't care how many people have sources, their secret sources from Planet X or Planet XYZ. No one knows what these agreements are and how they can keep things moving along. However, time is coming shorter and shorter. There's going to be something from left field that's going to come by, and everybody's going to be scratching their heads and scrambling. And I'm going to hear every day, I wished I had. I wished I would have. I wished I would have bought when you told me to. I wished I would have listened to you. And so now, folks, here's your opportunity. We're having slow months. The industry is having slow. Prices are low. There are great buying opportunities on all your products. $20 gold pieces, we've seen the prices drop in spot gold, but they're fairly strong. They've corrected a little bit, but not nearly as much as bullion has in the past couple of weeks. So take advantage and get stored up on your gold and silver. Get a plan. Get positioned. That way, when things do unfold, you can just sit back and say, yeah, I'm good. And that's what it's all about. And I didn't mean to get off on that track there. But when I saw those numbers, I thought, you know what? We got to go over old news, because it's the old news is why you buy gold and silver. The new news.
Old news is fundamentals.
Exactly. The new news is just
white noise a lot of times. It's what's happening today, and an hour or two from now, something different will happen. Tomorrow it'll be different again, and different. But the old news, insofar as it reflects fundamentals, it was true a year ago and 5 years ago, and it's going to be true 5 years from now. We may not talk about it very much. We all face the problem of information overload, and we hear so much information all the time. It's going up, it's going down, moving sideways, you know, blah, blah, blah. The fundamentals are overcome by the moment by moment. We're watching the market every minute. And we try to explain and understand what happens to prices on a minute by minute basis. Oh, it went up. No, it's going down. It really doesn't make a lot of sense. You got to get back to those fundamentals. Got to get back to those fundamental ideas. Even though you've heard them a bunch of times, you tend to forget them. All right? In the onslaught of the moment-by-moment news that's coming at us all the time. So,
speaking of moment-to-moment news, did you see the recap on Pelosi when she is she goes after Representative Tom Marino out of Pennsylvania? He's a Republican, and Pelosi lashed out at him after he accused the Democrats of neglecting the immigration issue when they actually controlled the House back in 2009 and 2010. And she just went over to him and pointed her finger at him and called him insignificant. She went up to, I mean, she basically almost ran. If you see the pictures, the video, it's like she's a wild woman. It's like she's insane. She's wagging her finger.
I've seen the report, and it's not the first one. She's done a couple other goofy things in the last, I don't know, last 90 days. I'm beginning to think that maybe she's losing it. Right? Maybe, you know, you get old enough, you get a little peculiar. Now, I certainly haven't become peculiar, at least not yet, Melody. Not until tomorrow. Maybe not until tomorrow for me, but I think Pelosi's way ahead of me. I think she's already getting a little bit strange, and I think maybe it's time. Just that's right, Nancy. Here we're gonna. We've got a rocking chair picked out for you, and you can go sit on it at your West Coast, wherever she is.
Yeah, but you know what? Just goes to show you. She said that she accepted Marino's apology. He came out and said, I never apologized to her. And yet she's walking around saying, well, I accept his apology. And you know what? They're so proud of their Dream Act. The Dream Act is part of the problem. Yeah. And I mean, it's just, that's why we go back to the fundamentals, people, because if you listen to this, folks, I should say, if you go back to the, and you read again what Al was talking about, the current news, it's enough to.
You got to pay attention. Once you get into it, you know, it's important, but you have to, you've got to be able to balance it. You've got to be able to weight the news. A lot of what you hear right now is just a certain amount of white noise. It's interesting. It may ultimately become important, but odds are it's going to be just replaced by more white noise tomorrow, and you've got to weigh that. You can't ignore it on one level, but you can't be driven by it. You got to go back and look, find your stability in the fundamentals. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on financial survival, and Frank is telling us we've got to stop talking so we can do some commercials. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. What's next, Melody?
What's the update on Ukraine, Al?
A little article here from Simon Black. He's the editor of SovereignMan.com. He says, according to both Ukrainian and Russian news sources, several hundred Ukrainian soldiers were left without weapons or ammunition and then crossed the border into Russia. Now, the Ukrainian news say it was forced withdrawal after being routed by rebel forces. The Russian news says the troops were seeking asylum, no doubt tired of war. The Ukrainian government is in a hurry, trying to raise at least $1 billion. That's the point here. These guys didn't have any ammunition for their rifles, and they just went over to Russia and said, that's it, we quit, we want asylum. That's apparently what happened. Well, it's evidence that the Ukrainian government is out of money. They're broke. So the Ukrainian government is in a hurry trying to raise at least $1 billion. They've raised wage taxes and natural resource taxes and even taxes on farming exports. What do you suppose the impact on the people is going to be, the Ukrainian people? The government they had a previously elected government. The United States helped to overthrow the previously elected government to put the current government in office, which hasn't even been there for a year, and they're raising taxes in order to fight a war. What do you suppose that's going to do to the morale and will to fight of the Ukrainian people. I don't think it's going to work out very well. I think raising taxes to fight a war against rebels is probably counterproductive. It'll probably alienate more Ukrainians and diminish military morale and will to fight. The only way modern governments can fight wars without alienating their own people at the time is on credit. If you have to fight a war on a cash and carry basis, you're doomed to lose. You know, you may remember back during the Vietnam War, Lyndon Johnson said we could have both guns and butter, meaning we could fight a war and still be prosperous here in this country. And to some degree, he was correct because the war was fought on credit. If the American people, every time government wanted to say, let's invade Afghanistan, and your taxes will be going up tomorrow, how long do you suppose people are going to support that war? The government says, let's invade Iraq, and your taxes will go up tomorrow. How long do you suppose the people would support the war in Iraq or the invasion of Libya or anything else? If we had to pay right now for every military adventure we were involved in, I guarantee the public would quickly turn on the government every time they march off to some frivolous war. But government avoids that anti-government sentiment by fighting our wars on credit. We're going to invade Afghanistan and Iraq and Libya, or at least be involved in whatever happened in Libya. We're going to do that and send a bill, not to you folks, we're going to send it to your children. Isn't that great? And the kids, they don't even know what's going on. They trust their parents. They trust the government. They don't know what's going on. They don't know that they are being sent into debt servitude, debt bondage, maybe even debt slavery by a government who doesn't have enough nerve and courage to fight a war on a cash and carry basis. I saw an article, there was a little encyclopedia set of a dozen or 20 books from Time Life. And the one, they did a series of these little encyclopedias, these sets. And there was one of them that was the 20th century, the century of war. And they focused on all of the wars that took place during the 20th century. And they expounded on the idea that, gee, we're having a lot more wars in the 20th century than we have previously. But they didn't explain why. And the answer is credit. If you can't fight a war on credit, you're going to lose. You won't maintain the support of your people. If you start billing them right now, and that's what the Ukraine is trying to do, is tax their people right now to fight the rebels. It won't work out well for them. Right? But as long as there's credit, we can have war. So, Melody, let's say hooray for all the people that provide credit to the government. They make war possible. But if we didn't have deficit financing, if the government couldn't finance itself by going deeper and deeper into debt, we would never have been in Vietnam. We wouldn't have been in Afghanistan or Iraq, at least not for the amount of time we were there. We might have stopped in for 90 days or 6 months, but that would have been as far as it goes if we have to pay out of our own pockets. So there's an important lesson here to my mind. You know, credit, especially for government, is a dangerous, dangerous concept. It was with the rise of enormous credit that we could fuel all those wars in the 20th century. And as long as we continue running on a credit-based economy, not just in the United States, but globally, we can expect to see more war. If we went back to cash and carry with real money that couldn't be spun out of thin air, back with gold and silver, one of the benefits for everyone is we would see a lot less war. So, if you don't like war, get gold. Get silver. Encourage other people to do the same thing. Enough people do it, it'll actually slow down. It'll eliminate, it will reduce, it won't eliminate, but it will reduce the amount of credit available to government, in my opinion, and if it does, government will be less able to march in and invade any place on the face of the earth, and I think that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, but while they have the financing available, they're going to continue to create wars.
Oh, yeah.
And they're
going
to continue to finance wars.
Yeah.
So, you know, they can't turn around because they can't pay. So they have to go forward. They have to borrow in order to keep the system going.
Oh, I understand. They're caught on a treadmill now that they can't. The only way you can get off of this thing is a collapse. You can't just ease your way out and say, okay, I tell you what. I know we've been going deeply into debt for the last 40 years or more, but we're going to stop that. See? And now it'll all be good. But they can't. This thing is a giant Ponzi scheme, and each year's debt depends on going even deeper into debt the following year, and then even deeper into debt the year after that. And it's like gambling in a casino where you just double your bet. You know, you keep on doubling your bet in order to win it all back. Well, maybe you'll win it all back, or maybe you're going to lose everything you ever had. You know, it's a dangerous strategy. And insofar as we have a debt-based monetary system, we're in it, and you can't quit. I mean, if you're doubling your bet at Las Vegas, after you lose $1,000, bet $2,000. Lose the $2,000, bet $4,000. Lose the $4,000, bet $8,000, and so on. But how much money do you have? You're betting that you've got enough money to keep doubling your bet, and you'll get to a point where they pay off before you run out of money. But if you run out of money, you're done. Then all of those losses are real. There's no longer an opportunity to double up. Something like that goes on with our debt-based system. They've got to go deeper into debt every single year in order to hold this thing together. And if it starts to dry up, can't go deeper into debt, you reach the limit of your credit rating, say, nope, we're not going to lend you any more on your head. Now what? And the answer is collapse. There is no way, there is no graceful or painless way to dismount from this Ponzi scheme. When this thing, when you get thrown off of this thing, it's like riding a bucking bronco. And when it finally throws you off, you better hope you're on soft ground, because if it's rocky ground, you're going to get hurt pretty badly.
Mm. This whole thing, when you know, we mentioned earlier about insanity.
Mm-hmm.
It is the whole system. It's just insane with what's going on. Totally insane, and how people believe that this can continue or refuse to accept what's going on. It baffles me. Truly baffles me.
Well, you know, you see somebody, we were talking earlier. I saw that article you talked about, and it's begun to cross my mind, you know, before you mentioned it, that Nancy Pelosi may finally be losing it. So, you know, some of these people, they stick around. There've been some stories about senators who've been there forever. They've been there for 40 years or whatever. They get a little strange toward the end, start talking about raising chickens on the congressional record. But strange things happen when you get old enough. It could be that Nancy Pelosi is at that point, and it may be just a function of age, or maybe she's not there. I don't know. It just looks like maybe she's. But one of the causes... There are people in Congress and people in the Senate who are privy to information that right now may be just flat out shocking to them, where they realize that somehow, no matter what they thought they were doing, they may have thought they were doing the right thing, or they may have thought they were doing something that was at least tolerable. And you can speculate, we don't know this to be true, but you can speculate that they're beginning to say, oh my God, what have I done? And in the midst of that kind of guilt, it can cause people to become a little mentally unbalanced.
I agree with you, but these people, I'm not going to blame.
You think
they're
immune?
Yeah,
I hear what
you're saying. Guilt. They have no guilt on what they've done. If they felt any guilt, they would change something, or they would present themselves differently than how they are. I wouldn't want to come across as being insane just because I was guilty of the way I voted. And
well, none of us want to believe that. But if you face this up on a daily basis. And I suspect that some congressmen and senators do.
No, I think they just get so to the point of.
And there's
they believe. Somebody told me a long time, you shouldn't. I can't remember exactly, but they begin to believe what they say is true.
I know. You got to be careful. You don't fall for your own nonsense. You know, you start to believe in your own BS, and now you're in deep trouble.
No, that's
one thing to tell people when you know better. It's another thing to start believing your lies. You become self-destructive.
But how much time do we have left?
Well, you mean on the program today, or life in general, or?
Well, here's a quick story.
This week?
We're close to the end. Here's a quick story. There's a school in Nebraska. You know, students at the beginning of each year, they go around, they sell candy and cookies and pizza to raise money for anywhere from school supplies to field trips, different excursions to various places. And one of their top fundraisers is chocolate bars.
Yep.
Lots of times chocolate bars will, you know, yearbooks, pictures, and that sort of thing. Now, because of this law that is being passed with Michelle Obama, the Hunger Free Kids Act, and her campaign, Let's Move, the whole thing has been overhauled. These kids can't sell chocolate candy bars anymore. There's restrictions on what they can do to raise money. And again, it's another thing of insanity. It's so simple and so small, but yet it's like, are you serious?
Yeah, that's the problem.
Mean,
it's like when you see the government intruding. Some kid is selling lemonade. And we had a rash of these things back about, haven't heard it now, maybe a year. But we had a rash of them for a period of 18 months. Police were going after kids that are selling lemonade out on the sidewalk in front of their house because they didn't have a food manufacturer's license or something. There is a point when government becomes absurd. You know, and somebody's just got to say, hey, look, get off our backs. And what you're talking about, the government has decided they can't sell candy bars.
Yeah, there's restrictions on what they can sell for. So they need to go out and sell cauliflower.
You're going to make, you have to print your yearbooks on tissue paper or something like that, because if you're going to sell cauliflower, you're not going to make enough money to produce any yearbooks. It's, some of this is just insane, and it's evidence of people in positions of power who just don't know when to stop. We know when to stop. Because if we don't, Frank will start playing the music. And he's going to do that pretty quick now because we're out of time. I'm Alfred Adask here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back mañana. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.